It's time for the Rink Rats. With your hosts, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace and Jesse Granger.
Rink Rats. Ryan the Hockey Guy, Jesse Granger. We are here in the studio where Rink Rats actually started. We're in a different studio today. This is the one that I made my home for quite a while. Jesse, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, man.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Hopefully, it was brought to our attention that we have some crutches that we utilize with our speaking over the podcast. So we are going to work our hardest at not saying at the end of the day. And what was yours?
Honestly,
I've never heard you say honestly.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, sometimes you just got to do those things.
So, Vince, you're welcome. That was just for you. Let's get into it. We've got a lot to talk about, obviously. We will get to Golden Knight stuff later. We're going to talk about Fleury's concussion. We're going to talk about Malcolm Subban and how he has adjusted to life as a starting goalie in the NHL. We might even throw in an interview that I did with Malcolm during that time. Talk about Chicago, upcoming game against the Blackhawks next week. That's going to be the litmus test for this team. We can argue it any way we want to, but that game in and of itself will be a measuring stick for the Vegas Golden Knights. We're going to talk about Vadim Shipachyov. Is he redeemed? We finally found out where he is, where he was. He scored a goal. Good job for him. But we're going to start off talking about the NHL as a whole. And my God, Connor McDavid. Did you see that play that he made against the Chicago Blackhawks? A spinorama, no look, backhand pass right on the tape for Patrick Maroon to tap it home against the Chicago Blackhawks, against Duncan Keith, one of the top 100 players of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it was spectacular. It's what Connor McDavid does. He's like Shipachyov, 100%. He prefers to pass over shooting. He hasn't been scoring as well this year, no. But he's still been dishing it out to the other guys on his team, Draisaitl and these guys. But that pass, and you call it a spinorama, but to me the most impressive part was it wasn't just a spin. Like, there was a part where he kind of paused in the middle of it and just was skating backwards at full speed with three guys around him. And then completed the spin. Like, at that point where he flips around and now he's just skating backwards, there are three Blackhawks trying to steal the puck from him. Right. He's just, like, in the middle of them, skating backwards at full speed towards the goal. Like, what is going on right now? And then he finishes the spin, finds him right across the crease. Unbelievable. I mean, we're witnessing... I think this is a very cool time in hockey with McDavid and Matthews and some other guys who are starting to come around too. We're going to talk a little bit about the Lightning.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of young stars in this league that, in a league that's been dominated by older stars, I think, for the last few years.
Jaromir Jagr?
Yeah. Not that old.
No, so what I thought was most impressive about it was, like you said, he was skating backwards. It wasn't just like a desperation spinorama. Like, he was in complete control of what he was doing, and he didn't rush it. Like, with Patrick Kane, because he had a play very similar to it where he went. It was the 10-1 win against the Pittsburgh Penguins where he had a spinorama, backhand pass, cross crease, and he found somebody. I don't know who it was, but for an easy goal. Patrick Kane... That play that he had was a little bit more sped up. It was a little bit more desperation. It was a little bit more, I already have made up in my mind what I'm going to do, and that's what I'm going to do. When Connor McDavid spun into Duncan Keith, there was no play in his mind yet. He skated backwards to have his body between Duncan Keith and the puck, and it was a puck protection thing. And like you said, there was a moment where he was just gliding, just kind of floating there. And then all of a sudden, I don't know if he noticed Patrick Maroon going far side or what, but when he decided to complete the spin, it was instantaneous, turn around, find the player, no chance for Anton Forsberg on that. And it was a desperate goal. They needed that goal. They were down 1-0. This is a team that hasn't played particularly well out of the gate. They needed that play, and their captain delivered.
Yeah, you said it better than I did. That's what I was trying to get to, was just that he wasn't, he was literally coming up with that as he was spinning.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like you said, it wasn't like he saw him and he's like, I'm going to spin around these guys and pass it to him.
Yeah.
He turned around just like you said to protect the puck and then just made that play up on the fly. He's unbelievable. And yeah, they've had a slow start. I was watching SportsCenter and oh my God, sometimes the lack of hockey knowledge on there is so frustrating.
Sure. Yeah.
I forgot who it was. It was some female anchor on there, but she's breaking down the play and she's like, and it's super impressive because like the Oilers are like a historically bad team and they haven't had any success lately. So it's really cool for them. And I'm like,
2016-17 never happened.
They're like one of the best teams in the league. Like they're a favorite to win the Stanley Cup.
Right. Well, you know, hopefully that'll all change now that Greg Wyshynski is with ESPN, right? So maybe the hockey knowledge, maybe the highlights won't roll during the credits of SportsCenter anymore. Maybe we'll get, you know, a highlight here or there thrown into the middle where you can actually appreciate it.
So. Yeah.
So McDavid is awesome. He will pick it up. I have no doubt in that. You look at a guy like McDavid, you know he's going to be top three, top four in the league in scoring every single year for the next 15 years. It's just going to happen. The pucks are going to start to go in for him. When Draisaitl gets back from his concussion, you know, that'll open up some ice for McDavid as well. So he's not having to do everything by himself.
Nugent Hopkins also needs to start playing better.
You know, it's tough with him, though, because they want him to be a third-line shutdown guy.
Yeah. I don't know. I remember last year, especially in the playoffs, he was, to me, one of the guys that stood out watching it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, other than the big-name guys. And I just remember, like, man, I love the way he plays hockey. And this year, I've watched a couple Oilers games, and he's just not – he just doesn't pop off the screen to me. Like you said, he's a shutdown guy. But you know me. I love my forechecking.
Yeah.
There's
yeah,
a reason course. Alex Tuck's my favorite player on this
Absolutely,
team.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he just – isn't the guy that he was last year during the playoffs. Maybe he's kind of in, he's just coasting because mm-hmm. it's early in the season. And you don't want to wear yourself out, especially with a high paced game like he plays.
Sure.
But he just hasn't been that force on the ice that he was last year, in my opinion, so far. I mean, that whole team has kind of got off to a slow start.
They've been sleepwalking through the beginning of the season. They have. And Milan Lucic has been okay, not great. And that's pretty much what you expect with Milan Lucic. He's kind of a slow starter. Always has been, always will be. And, you know, Nugent Hopkins I'm not too worried about because he is one of those guys that's very adept at turning it on when he needs to. And you don't pay him to score. You've got to understand that as an Edmonton Oilers fan. You have to understand that's not his role on this team. His role is to shut down the opposition from scoring. And as long as he's ending up a plus player at the end of the year, then he's done his job.
Yeah, and speaking of shutting him down, that's another guy that struggled is Cam Talbot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And last year, I think, was the best season of his career, and this year he's just not. And it seems like a lot of really good goalies are out of the gates struggling this year.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Let's talk about that, actually, because we're going to throw two goalies kind of, you know, into the wind right now. But I don't think it's their fault. Henrik Lundqvist, Carey Price. Two of arguably the best goalies in the league over the last 6 years.
Yeah.
Easily, right? They, between them, have a combined 2 wins on the season.
Yeah.
In 16 games.
And they've had a lot of games where they gave up a ton of goals.
They did. Carey Price was pulled last night and decided to break his stick over the goalpost because he's so frustrated that the Canadians can't score any goals. Where do you put the blame for the Montreal Canadiens and their slow start? Do you put it on Carey Price not being that good, or do you put it on the Montreal Canadiens for having a team with no scoring, no ability to put the puck in the net, and no identity at all?
No, I put it 100% on you got to give that guy some goal support.
Mm-hmm.
As a goalie, even if you're giving up some goals more than you're used to,
mm-hmm.
if your team is helping you out and getting some on the other end, it makes you feel a little bit better about yourself.
Right.
This team has 12 goals through 7 games.
It's bad.
That's insane.
But Jonathan Drouin was going to be the answer.
Yeah, the Golden Knights had almost 12 goals in their game the other day. the Montreal Canadiens just cannot score right now.
No.
And their defense, Alzner, has come in, and I think he's the worst plus-minus on the entire team.
Sure.
He's not. he has not been what they paid him to be. Carey Price has given up a bunch of goals, but I mean, he's still, in my opinion, it's not even close.
Right.
He's the best goalie in the NHL. And I don't even think the second best goalie is even close to Carey Price as far as just not performance, but just skills. He's the best goalie in the NHL. And they're hanging him out to dry. He's had a couple that are like, I've watched a few Montreal games and I just notice, I mean, it's Carey Price, so they treat him different than other goalies.
Right.
They're not just firing pucks at him. They've got somebody in front of him at all times. Yeah. There have been a lot of deflections that get past him, and what's he going to do? But the Canadiens have just not helped him at all.
So we look at the Montreal Canadiens, and we look at what they've done over the last two seasons. Trade away P.K. Subban, a guy that can get in and get the puck out very quickly. He can generate chances off the rush. He can generate scoring chances in the offensive zone. And they get rid of him for a guy like Shea Weber, who's got the sandpaper, and he's got the big shot on the power play, but is a little bit slower, not as fleet of foot as P.K. Subban, which is, you know, one of those things that you need in hockey. When the puck is in your zone, you need somebody that can corral it and get it out as quickly as it came in. And then you look at Radulov. Radulov is a guy that scores goals. And you replace him with Jonathan Drouin, who is a setup guy, much the same as Vadim Shipachov. 100% likes to pass the puck. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Drouin, when he was acquired by the Montreal Canadiens, there was an interview with Jonathan Drouin with a local paper where he said it was very difficult adjusting to life in Montreal because people would come up to him at the grocery store and they would say, 50 goals this year, 50 goals this year. No, 50 goals never. Like, the kid may not score 50 goals over the next three season combined because that's not his game.
Yeah.
And there's so much pressure on him now. Alex Galchenyuk, they've completely given up putting him at center. They want to put him on the wing. That's not where he's going to excel. It's not where he's going to help out the team better long term. And then you got Andrei Markov, another defenseman that could go in, get the puck, move it out, get rid of him for Carl Alsner. Like, it's so bad in Montreal because they took where the game was going. And they took the players that they had that could play that style, quick, up-tempo, skating, and they replaced them with guys that played the Los Angeles Kings style of hockey from 2012, and that doesn't win in the league anymore.
And a guy like Shea Weber, who hasn't played great on the defensive end, you would at least expect him to contribute offensively. He's done nothing.
Well, the guy can't score unless it's on the power play.
I think he's got one assist and one goal this year. Not what you expect from Shea Weber. And like you said, he can't score, but like this guy needs to be facilitating on the offensive end. He should have 3, 4, 5 assists. He's not getting it done. And then you see P.K. Subban and how great he's been for Nashville since that trade. Man, they're a freaking disaster. And then, like, what is Claude Julien doing? Like, is he the coach?
So that's what I wanted to talk about. And the other team that I wanted to bring up in this situation, because they're exactly the same, we talked about Henrik Lundqvist, is the New York Rangers. The New York Rangers have one center, legitimate center. Rick Nash can't score to save his life. They trade away Derek Stepan. I what are they doing? What are they doing?
I think the Rangers just aren't – like, I see the comparisons, the parallels between them and the – Canadians, but to me, the Rangers just don't have enough talent to win hockey games.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the Canadians do have talent. If you just go down their roster and just look at each individual player, like the Canadians should be winning games.
Mm-hmm.
The Rangers, like you said, Rick Nash, these guys are getting old, and he looks like he probably shouldn't be out on the ice anymore. Like this team is bad.
Yeah.
And Lundqvist, the Rangers actually have given Lundqvist way more goal support than the Canadians have Price, but he has not looked sharp. And we talked about it when we were doing the season previews a few weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
Can Lundqvist have like a Vezina type season? And I said I wouldn't doubt it if he did.
Yeah,
but after watching him for a couple weeks, I'm starting to think that maybe that he started rolling down that hill a little faster than we thought he would.
Right. So in looking at those two teams, do you think either one of those coaches is on the hot seat?
Oh, you're never not on the hot seat with the Montreal Canadiens, I feel like.
Sure.
And it's funny because usually if there's like a team that the coach is always on the hot seat, it's a team like that has success.
Mm-hmm.
And we expect to win because that's what we do here is win. The Canadiens haven't won since I was negative 27 years old. And yet they still expect to win a Stanley Cup every year because they're freaking psychos up
there. It's so bad.
Which is a good thing. It's a good kind of psycho. They love hockey. They want to be good at hockey. It's a good type of psycho up in Montreal, but they are crazy.
Yeah.
And
delusional.
I feel like you're always on the hot seat. If this team, I mean, what are they, 1-6?
1-6-1, maybe, something like that.
I mean, they're awful. If they don't win, if they don't start turning this around very soon, I think Julian's seat, I think he could be fired fairly quickly.
I mean, considering they fired Michel Therrien last year when they were in first place in their division.
Because Julian became available.
Exactly.
That was such a weird thing.
But see, like, I don't know, man. I think that when you look at the situation in Montreal, I think that it's Mark Bergevin's fault. I mean, look at all the moves that he made and all of the things that just don't make any sense to win right now. It's not the coach.
I agree with you.
You know, it's not the coach, but I wonder what's going to happen.
It just sucks that they're wasting away. Like, you have the best goalie in the league. Like, these are the years that you should be competing for Stanley Cups, and I feel like they're just wasting it.
What do you think happens first? Claude Julien gets fired. Carey Price requests a trade. Mark Bergevin gets fired.
Claude Julien gets fired.
Really?
I don't think Carey Price requests a trade. I think that's 0% chance of that happening. Bergevin, it's just harder to fire a GM than it is to fire a coach.
Sure.
Because the GM will fire his coach to try to save his own ass.
Like, see, I think he did that when he fired Michel Therrien. Like, I think that was his mulligan. That was his, okay, we know that this team isn't very good. We know that they're not going to be very good. Mark Bergevin, at the trade deadline last year, brought in Dwight King. Like, you could have tried really, really hard to bring in Matt Duchene to get some secondary scoring for that club in a Eastern Conference outside of the Pittsburgh Penguins that was completely wide open.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think that the Montreal Canadiens with Matt Duchene, you don't think that they could have beaten the Ottawa Senators? They absolutely could have.
Yeah, well, they could have beat him without him.
They didn't. They should have, yeah. But again, that's what I'm saying. Like, you don't load up with grit and sandpaper in a league that isn't going that direction right now at the trade deadline and then say, oh, well, I'm the GM. I'm doing a good job, so you should keep me and fire Claude Julien.
Yeah, I mean, man, it's just, I'm not like inside Montreal Canadiens like I am like some other teams that I pay attention more. But I would just think it's a lot easier to fire a coach than it is a GM. I don't think Carey Price is going anywhere.
But he's never going to win a Stanley Cup in Montreal.
Not the way they're currently constructed, no. I still think this is a playoff team. I still think, right now, if we were to guess, I think this team makes the playoffs.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I can see it. I can see them making it. I can see them, you know, getting some scoring eventually. I can see Carey Price getting fed up with it and just saying, all right, I'm not going to allow any more than 2 goals a game because that's what I have to do. And that's great. But I think that the emphasis you're going to put on Carey Price to be perfect throughout the remainder of the season is going to take its toll, and he's going to have nothing left for the playoffs, which is basically what the Montreal Canadiens have done every single year they've made the playoffs. Carey Price has had to be sensational, and he has been. And then they get there, and he's exhausted. He can't carry the workload, and they fizzle out in the first round.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. So looking at a team that's not off to a bad start, let's talk about Tampa Bay Lightning. Let's talk about Steven Stamkos. 11 assists, I think 3 goals, 14 points. Tied with the scoring lead with Nikita Kucherov, who's got more goals than Steven Stamkos. Did you see that happening at the beginning of the year? I mean, we knew the Lightning were going to be good. Like, I knew they were going to be good. But Stamkos and Kucherov are becoming the 1-2 punch that everybody envisioned Draisaitl McDavid would be, that everybody sees Crosby and Malkin. So are they that good? And if Stamkos goes down with his annual injury, will they be able to keep it up?
Well, when we did did the season previews, we said if Stamkos stays healthy, this team might have the best 1-2 punch in the entire league.
Mm-hmm.
And so far they have.
Yeah.
Now, we didn't expect it to this extent. What Kucherov is doing right now is unreal. Like
he's so creative.
And Tampa Bay is, I hope they keep this up.
Yeah.
I hope this goes into the playoffs and this team is one of the top teams because they play a fun brand of hockey. This isn't, and the Penguins are the same thing, but this, they do not grind it out. They're not like the Kings, Ducks, like what the Canadians have tried to do and failed miserably.
Mm-hmm.
The Lightning play a fun, fast, they don't dump the puck into the zone. They bring it into the zone.
Yeah.
And they're bringing it in the zone with the intention of getting the puck on net.
Right.
It's a really fun brand of hockey. I like watching them. And what Nikita Kucherov is doing right now is, I think he might even be underrated, even though he's getting all this attention now. He still might be underrated. Like, this guy is unbelievably good.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I think Nikita Kucherov is one of those players that relishes being under the radar. In much the same way as Evgeny Malkin. And it's weird to say that Evgeny Malkin is underrated. But again, when you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, the guy you're going to see is Sidney Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
Like him or hate him, you go to see what he can do. And then Malkin just kind of floating in the background, being able to see the team, the opposing team's lesser coverage. That helps his game overall just by virtue of playing with Sidney Crosby. And I think it's the same deal with Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos. You have Stamkos in the lineup. Your opposing teams are focused on Steven Stamkos. You don't want Steven Stamkos to beat you. So what ends up happening? It opens up room for guys like Tyler Johnson, Andre Palat. It opens up room for Nikita Kucherov. And let's not discount the fact that these guys have Victor Hedman on defense. Victor Hedman is a very, very, very good defenseman. And again, plays an exciting brand of hockey. Take some chances here and there, but he's such a good skater and he's so big that he can make up for the mistakes that he makes.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the guy, you don't think that's a good skater because he's massive.
Uh-huh.
And then you just see him move and he's like one of those guys where every stride he takes is like three strides for the next guy next to him. So he doesn't look like he's skating fast and then he's just blowing past people.
Absolutely.
Hedman's a beast. This team is I really, really like this team. And kind of like last year, the Columbus Blue Jackets kind of took the league by storm. They mm-hmm. Everyone's like, oh my God, who are these guys? And by the end of the year, they were going into the playoffs, one of the favorites to win it all.
Yeah.
I think the Lightning could be that this year. They could be this year's Columbus Blue Jackets, but I think they could do more damage in the playoffs. The Blue Jackets just got a really bad draw and had to play the Penguins in the first round, which,
sure.
by the way, we could spend an entire podcast talking about how stupid the playoff seeding system is, but
we should do that because
when the playoffs are coming up.
Yeah, when we get to the playoffs, we can talk about, like, my dream scenario for the playoffs is that just, you know, a team that absolutely deserves to win or deserves to be in the playoffs is ousted because some crappy team in a lesser division gets a seeding that they should have. Like, that's my absolute dream, is that a team with like 112 points or something like that gets left out. I know it's not going to happen, but it would be so great, and Gary Bettman would have to answer questions. He'd be like, it's the playoff seeding. That's the rules that we have, guys.
I hate it so bad.
It's so dumb.
It used to be perfect. Just do the top eight.
1 through 8.
Yeah.
How crazy is that? 1 through 8, the two division winners get the 1-2 seeding. Everything else after that just falls into place. Really simple.
It's stupid. They have like 2-1 seeds on each side. It's like a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
It's so dumb because they do it, right? They're like, oh, it's divisional play. It's divisional play, blah, blah, blah. Well, not unless you have two wild card teams from the opposite division. Then they have to cross over, and it does away with your whole divisional theory. It's really stupid. It's really dumb. Let's just go back to 1 through 8. Gary, if you're listening to this, and you should be, go back to 1 through 8.
I'm sure Gary Bettman's a regular listener, too.
He better be. He's one of the downloads every week. I can tell you that.
Good.
Yeah. So the Montreal Canadiens are a mess. The New York Rangers are a mess. The Tampa Bay Lightning are doing pretty well. And a team that's near and dear to my heart that's doing pretty well to start the season is the Los Angeles Kings. They are the only unbeaten team in regulation. That's a distinction I'm going to take with my two Stanley Cups. But here's the problem. The Los Angeles Kings were able to get off to this hot start with Jeff Carter in the lineup, but not scoring goals. He had 3 assists through the first 6 games. Unfortunately, Jeff Carter suffered a laceration on his leg. It was a partial Achilles tear and required surgery to fix. So it begs the question, Jeff Carter out indefinitely, probably a couple of months, maybe even into the new year. His presence alone has opened up room for Anje Kopitar, for Dustin Brown to recapture somewhat of a scoring touch. Jeff Carter out of the lineup long term is going to make this team subpar very quickly.
Yeah, I agree. Man, it was such a gross injury too. I hate skate cut injuries.
Yeah.
No, it just grosses me out.
Yeah, it's gross.
This wasn't like one of the like face ones or the neck ones where you actually see it because it's under his sock, but just like when you hear his Achilles tendon was lacerated by a skate, that's horrible.
Yeah, it's gross.
And you brought him up, and I think what this injury does more than anything is it puts a ton of pressure on Anje Kopitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know if he's ready to be that guy. To just at this stage in his career this year, I don't know if Kopitar is ready to. All right, you're the offense.
Yeah, it all runs through you. And with Kopitar, it's tough, right? Because in much the same way we talked about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Kopitar's value, it's on scoring to an extent, but it's also on shutting down the opposition's top line. He used to be a perennial Selke Trophy finalist.
Mm-hmm.
And he still has really good numbers defensively. The problem is, when he's focused on that, he's not scoring goals. And when you make $10 million a season to score goals and be the captain and be the face of the franchise, that's a problem.
Yeah, and if he has to take on those responsibilities of the offense flowing through him,
mm-hmm.
you know the defensive end is going to suffer. That's just how it works.
Right.
And now it's almost like the Kings are losing two players because you're losing Jeff Carter, obviously.
Right.
But now that Kopitar has to step up into that role, now you've lost Jeff Carter, who's your best facilitator on your team,
mm-hmm.
led your team in goals last year. And you've kind of lost Kopitar's defensive lockdown on the other end because now he's had to step into that. And now he's playing a role that he's not as good at.
Right.
It's not good for the Kings. We vastly overestimated how far they were going to fall. I think we were really low on them going into the season. They are clearly better than we thought they were going to be. But this could be a pretty big hit to them, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we underestimated them, or at least I underestimated them, because I was still stuck in Coach Sutter's mentality of we're not going to give any of the kids a chance. And you look at a guy like Alex Iafallo, who has jumped in and taken control of that top line. That guy is so fast. He sees the ice really well. And he's reinvigorated Kopitar and reinvigorated Dustin Brown. Adrian Kempe just had a hat trick the other night. The only problem with Adrian Kempe, he's a very good player and he has flashes of brilliance, but he has flashes. He doesn't actually do it consistently game to game. And, you know, you got Tanner Pearson, who could be better. You got Tyler Toffoli, who can put the puck in the net, but again, has those long spells where he doesn't score goals. And that line, Carter, Pearson, Toffoli, that 70s line, as they're called in Los Angeles, that line takes a humongous hit because they've got to figure out who's going to anchor that line with Carter out. Maybe it's something where you move Iafallo down or you move Kempe into that spot and you hope that he can maybe trigger the same type of reinvigoration that Iafallo did with Brown and Kopitar.
Yeah.
I just think that you're spreading yourself very thin if you're going to rely on players that have been traditionally hot and cold, inconsistent. It's going to be really difficult for your team to maintain what they're doing right now.
Just sitting here just listening to you go through those lines, I think Iafallo and Toffoli is a very interesting combination. I think that could work.
You know, it's funny, too, because when you look at Iafallo and what he does well, he gets in much the same way Alex Tuch does. He's in on the forecheck. He's speedy. He's fast. He can get around defenders. And with Tyler Toffoli, he's not slow, but he's not a first guy in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like everything that that 70s line does kind of centers around Jeff Carter and Tanner Pearson using their speed to get in, make plays, and find Toffoli as the trigger man.
Mm-hmm.
So Iafallo Toffoli, that might be a combination that does work, but do you take him away from Brown and Kopitar?
Especially
knowing
with how well they're playing.
How well that's been working? That's a tough spot for Kevin Stephens to be in year one.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. He'd rather be in this situation than what we thought he was going to be going into the year. That's just so unfortunate that Carter went down like that.
Yeah, so let's shift our attention from the Los Angeles Kings. We're going to talk about the Vegas Golden Knights because there's quite a bit to talk about with this team. The 5-1 Vegas Golden Knights. And I'm sorry. We're gonna talk about the Golden Knights, but we're also gonna talk about the Buffalo Sabres real quick.
Okay.
Why are they so bad?
I don't know. They've got talent.
For 8 minutes in the third period, they just were like, we're gonna turn it on. We're just going to play our brand of hockey. And they completely took over the game. They scored 3 goals in 8 minutes against the Vegas Golden Knights. Why are they so bad? Like, if they just played that way over the course of 60 minutes every single night, they would not have a losing record right now.
You hear a lot from coaches, and I feel like this is every sport, but in hockey in particular, you hear, the players are buying in.
Mm-hmm.
The players believe in us. The players want to be part of the team. I'm not in the Sabres locker room,
right?
But maybe guys that are really talented, like Evander Kane and Jack Eichel, maybe they're more focused on getting mine than buying in and trying to win hockey games. It's because these guys are like supremely talented hockey players that should be leading to team success.
Yeah,
but they just aren't.
Well, I have a question. And this is something that I thought about. Jack Eichel just signed an extension. Obviously, it doesn't kick in until next season, but it's $10 million, 8-year, $80 million contract. Okay? So we're looking at Jack Eichel, the $10 million man. Why in the hell do you not just throw the captaincy on him? Like, he's your long-term answer. And I understand that in hockey, a lot of people place way too much emphasis on having a captain, on having a leader. But Jack is the type of guy, and you can see it in his body language, he leaves it all out there on the ice every single shift, every single time he hops over those boards. So what's the problem? Why are you so afraid of just throwing the captaincy on him and letting him take control of the locker room and letting him say, this isn't acceptable, I'm tired of losing, and if you're not going to do it, like Kyle Okposo, if you're not going to do it, if you're not going to step up and make a statement, I will. Ryan O'Reilly, if you're not going to step,
really well,
he played
Vegas
a great game. Yes, he did. But again, if that's the guy that you think should be your leader, Ryan O'Reilly, slap the C on him. Like, just give somebody.
It needs to be Eichel.
I agree
with
you.
If you don't trust a guy enough to put the C on his chest, you probably shouldn't have given him $80 million.
No, and I totally agree with that. I completely agree with what you're saying. But my point is, for the Vegas Golden Knights, this makes sense. Rotating alternate captains makes sense. There's an identity forming, but there isn't anything set in stone yet with this team.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense. But you've got all this young talent in Buffalo. You've got Okposo. You've got O'Reilly. You've got Evander Kane. You've got Jack freaking Eichel. You've got Jason Pominville coming back, coming home, playing very well, invigorated by the youth. But you've got 4 alternate captains. It rotates every single time you're out at home or away. Just let one guy take control.
I agree. And it should be Eichel.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't high on Buffalo going into the year.
Yeah.
I don't think they're very good. I think they've got a lot of not to the extent that the Avalanche were last year, but you can have talent and be a bad team. And I think that's where the Buffalo Sabres are right now. They're just they just don't feel like they're playing as a team. They're the exact opposite of the Golden Knights, which are a bunch of guys that don't have near the talent that the Buffalo Sabres have, but they feel like a team.
Yeah, you said buy-in. The Golden Knights buy in. The Buffalo Sabres are just there.
And to segue into the Golden Knights, the million-dollar question in the NHL right now is, how are the Golden Knights doing this?
Yeah.
And nobody knows the answer. Otherwise, every coach in the league would have their team do that.
Yeah.
Whatever cereal they're eating. But I went into the locker room a couple days ago, and with the purpose of, I want to find out why this team is winning.
Mm-hmm.
Who will give me the most honest answer of anyone in this room? Nate Schmidt.
Nate Schmidt, yep.
Is the answer to that question. Yep. Every time. And so I went to Nate Schmidt, and I'm like, break it down for me, man.
Yeah.
I want you to quantify the unquantifiable. And he told me, to be honest, it's there are no expectations and there is no pressure. And every night when we take the ice, we feel like we almost like have a pass.
Yeah.
Because we're an expansion team. If we lose, whatever, that's what everybody expects us to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we go out there and have fun and play free and play loose. And then that gets magnified because not only are the Golden Knights playing loose, but their opponent is playing tight.
Because they have the pressure.
Because we can't lose to the new kids in town. These guys are a bunch of scraps that they picked up from all the rest of the teams in the league. We can't lose to the expansion team.
Right.
And when the Golden Knights get an early goal, when throw a team out there. When the Chicago Blackhawks get an early goal on you.
Mm-hmm.
You immediately don't thinking, oh, my God, what's going on? It's the Blackhawks. They scored. Okay, that's what they do. When the Golden Knights get an early goal, I feel like these teams are like, here we go again. What is going on?
Yeah.
And it just gets to them. This team is playing, and when you see it when you go to practice, I mean, they're having fun. This team, everything's going right for them, and I just think I really believe Schmidt when he says that. I don't think it was just player speak.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a huge reason why this team is winning, is they just can go out there and play to the best of their abilities because they're just having fun and everything's just coming so easy to them right now. They're not worried about what's going to happen if they mess up.
Right.
And other teams, that's all they can think about.
And it's funny, too, because you look at the Golden Knights and you look at the mood surrounding the team, and you're absolutely right. When you walk into the locker room, they're having a good time. They're getting to know each other. It's almost like the first semester at college, right? Where you've come from high school, you've come from the stress of having to graduate and having to figure out what you want to do with your life, and then you go to college. And then all of a sudden you're surrounded by these new people, and if you're smart, you want to learn to fit in. You want to learn to make friends, you want to do all the fun stuff outside of college. And like maybe your grades suffer a little bit, but you know You're not gonna fail college in your first semester. At least this is how it was for me. So I went and I had a great time and I learned and I grew and I had friends that I'll remember forever. And that's just kind of the atmosphere, is that they genuinely enjoy going to the rink every single morning. They enjoy going to the rink and playing in front of the T-Mobile Arena fans. And Gerard Gallant, I think, is the absolute best coach for the first 3 to 4 years. Because, and we've talked about this, he is the type of guy that builds you up, and he's the type of guy that says, we want to have fun, more than any other coach I've ever heard say that word. Ever.
He loves saying that.
It's like, we're gonna work hard, we're gonna compete hard, and we're gonna have fun out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, I literally think that is the mantra that is in every single player's head. So when they go down 1-0, they're like, yeah, let's just go make some plays, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, let's just go make some plays. And that's all they're thinking about. And that is what has allowed them to stick around and play very well the first 7 games of the season. What I'm worried about is what happens when that dries up, right? Like, so what happens when the Golden Knights have their first losing streak of more than 1 or 2 games? How is Gerard Gallant's message going to change? Is it going to change? Are they going to change? They're all questions that are left unanswered because they've only lost 1 game on the season. But I think if there's a coach that can get them out of a slump or get them out of a losing streak, it's going to be Gerard, because he understands what this year is.
Yeah.
And it's really a throwaway year.
I think Gallant's personality and his coaching style is actually even better for if the team is losing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he played in the NHL a million years. Mm-hmm. The dude has been through what these guys have been through. And after game 45, and they've lost 10 in a row, and their knees hurt, and their feet hurt, and they don't want to go to practice this morning, mm-hmm. and we don't want to do the extra conditioning at the end of practice. Gallant did all that.
Right.
He's done it all.
Yeah.
He knows how these guys feel. He can talk to them almost as if he's another hockey player with them. He's not this guy that hasn't been through. If for some of these coaches, they wear these suits, and it's like, if you're a player, it's like, well, screw you.
Yeah.
You don't know what my knees feel like right now. You don't know how bad this sucks. I don't want to be here. Gallant, I feel like that's his number one asset as a coach, is he is one of the guys.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And they see him that way. And when he gives them a message, they buy into it and they believe it, because he doesn't feel like he's talking down to them. It feels like he's just one of them.
One of the things I love about Gerard Gallant is when he walks into the practice, post-practice press conferences, and he's literally wearing shorts and no shoes. Like, just zero shoes. Just socks.
With knee-high socks.
Oh, they're fantastic.
White socks just pulled up as high as he can get them.
Yeah. No, it's great. It really is. And, you know, I agree with you. And everybody is sitting here looking at this team, 5-1, and wondering, at what point do we stop saying they're an expansion team? At what point do we stop saying, well, yeah, but the test is right around the corner, and they're going to hit reality and it's going to come crashing down? Like, at what point do we say, well, you know what, this team's actually a little bit better than we thought? And then if that does happen, if we're talking about game 50, game 55, and this team is still in playoff position or close to playoff position, does the focus change at all from Gerard Gallant? Does the focus change at all from George McPhee? Do they sit there and say, we've got something kind of special year one, let's make a play for the playoffs? Does anything change if this team is a playoff team game 55, game 60?
I don't think anything changes, because the mentality of each individual piece of this team right now, I think, will remain the same, and that is the players want to win.
Yep.
Gerard Gallant wants to win. Bill Foley wants to win. Everybody wants to win except for one person. And unfortunately for those that want to win, that's the one person that matters, and that's George McPhee. And he's told us the record will not get in the way of business decisions.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I truly believe that. And I don't disagree with it. I think McPhee has the right outlook. And if this team can somehow sneak into the playoffs, some miraculous season, while following George McPhee's plan for the future,
mm-hmm.
even better. But sure. I don't think he's going to sacrifice anything. I don't think George McPhee would sacrifice a 7th-round pick for this team to make the playoffs. Like, he wants assets for the future. That's all he cares about.
Yeah, no, you're right. Did I tell you that yesterday I asked Oscar Dansk if he was surprised Shea Theodore was sent down to the AHL?
What did he say?
So he laughed a little bit and smirked and looked at me and just started, like, you know, the player speak, like, you know, I don't worry about that. I'm a goalie, this, that, the other thing. And then, like, at the end of 45 seconds of just saying nothing, he was just like, I can't answer that question. Like,
yeah.
Great. It's like the most honest moment.
And that's the crazy thing about this team is, like, and yeah, are they truly a 5-1 team? Like, are they really that good? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
But they have won 5 of their first 6 games.
Right.
And they're doing it with a roster that is not the best roster they could put out there on the ice.
No.
Unlike 99% of the teams in the NHL, the Golden Knights are not putting out the best roster that they can right now.
No, they're not.
Shea Theodore would be out there.
Mm-hmm.
Guys like Jonathan Marchessault, who are on IR right now, but when they come back, it shouldn't be Marchessault's back, Tuck's back to the AHL. They should both be on there.
Yeah, absolutely.
To have the best lineup possible. This team still has room to get much, much better if they want to.
Yeah. So Marchessault comes back, is that automatically Tuck down to the AHL?
I sure hope not.
Well, it's not going to be Shipachov.
I know.
And then what about Holla? When Holla comes back, what do you do there?
That's what George McPhee's got to figure out. Is he going to make a trade? Is he going to finally waive Griffin Reinhart or Leipzig? or Nosek or one of these guys that, and a couple, like Nosek has been coming on lately. He's been playing a lot better.
Look at Leipzig too. Leipzig's been fantastic.
And that is the reason, and trust, nobody's given McPhee more crap for putting Theodore and Tuck in the AHL, but the entire reason he did it was to get a little more time to evaluate these guys. He said it. Sometimes you don't find what you have in a guy until later, and he doesn't want that to be on another team. He doesn't want to cut Leipzig, and then a year from now, Leipzig's a second-line forward, and McPhee's like, I had him, and I just let him go because I wanted to get these guys up from the AHL too quick.
Yeah, and that's the tough part. That's really the tough part with Brendan Leipzig is he's come on, and he's made the most of this opportunity. You're talking about a guy that didn't look particularly good in the preseason and didn't really stand out, and he's been given the chance in the at the beginning of the year in the absence of Vadim Shipachev, and this guy has taken full advantage of that opportunity.
The strangest thing, though, is Griffin Reinhart, because this team's carrying nine defensemen. Mm-hmm.
Hasn't played a game yet.
He's been a healthy scratch every single game. They don't want to cut him. What? I'm assuming they think someone's going to grab him off waivers. Otherwise, that could solve everything if you just send him down to the AHL. But they clearly won't, because he has some intel telling him he's probably going to get claimed, would be my guess.
Well, the problem with Griffin Reinhart is if you're trying to trade him, he's got no trade value because he hasn't played a game yet.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that they've won their last two games. I think if Hunt and Merrill go in and they lose that game in to Boston, then Reinhart and McNabb or Reinhart and Garrison are back in or whatever the case may be. He wants to get all nine of those defensemen into a couple of games so that he has something to draw on when teams call up, like, hey, the Washington Capitals, who need a defenseman. Mm-hmm. But again, with this team, you're going to have some tough questions, as George McPhee will have. If Howla comes back and Marchessault come back, the two guys that were brought up for those two players particularly are Tuck and Shipachev. And Shipachev is here, and he's playing, and we know that if Shipachev gets sent down to the AHL, he's going to go and sign the paperwork, and he's going to come right back to Las Vegas, and he's not going to play. So I know that it's going to be Tuck as the odd man out. Mm-hmm. We all know this. In spite of how well he's played, it's going to be Tuck. But what do you do with Shipachev if you haven't traded a defenseman, if you haven't moved a spot to keep Howla, Marchessault, and you need to keep all three. You need to keep Shipachev, you need to keep Howla, and you need to keep Marchessault. How do you do it?
Shipachev mysteriously injures his finger. I don't know. We still don't know what happened to Jonathan Marchessault. I still have no idea how he got hurt.
He said he in an interview with Hockey Buzz Shang Peng, he said that it was on the power play. He got hit and he went down a little bit awkwardly. When I was watching him skate yesterday, he didn't look hampered by it skating at all. His shooting was off. He was working on some shooting drills, and he was working on shooting off of his left leg. He said that he did that because he always shoots off of his right foot. I think that it was more testing the power that he had on his left leg more than anything. Mm-hmm. So it looked to me like it was a left leg injury. I made some observations when I was in the locker room, but I'm going to keep those to myself because I don't want to piss anybody off. But I think I know where the injury is. But he says he's close. He says he's probably going to be back in the next couple of games. So decision time for McPhee is coming up really quickly.
Yeah, and he doesn't want to waive Reinhart or any of these guys, and it's going to come down to what is more important. And I think to McPhee, the players are more important, but the assets are more important. But is it worth pissing off the best player on your team, in my opinion? Alex Tuck is the best player on the Vegas Golden Knights.
Easily.
He's better than Fleury. He's better than Neal. He's better than Perron. Alex Tuck's the best player on this team. Mm-hmm. And he's, in my opinion, going to be a captain down the road. Is it worth pissing him off over and over and over, sending him back and forth when he clearly belongs on this team? They're clearly a better team when he's on the ice. Mm-hmm. Is it worth that so that you can hang on to someone like Griffin Reinhart, who may or may not even be on this team next year?
We've argued no every single time. It's not worth pissing off Shea Theodore. It's not worth pissing off Alex Tuck. It's really not worth that at all when you're looking at the guys you're trying to protect and not lose in Griffin, Reinhardt, and
and Shipachov's another one of those guys, and who Tuck and Theodore have said all the right things.
Yep.
And they're clearly not happy with being in the AHL, but they've been doing it their whole career, so they kind of get it. Shipachov doesn't get it.
Well, no. And no, he does not.
And it's not going to be okay if they send him back down.
No, I totally agree with you on that. And that's why I think it's not going to be Shipachov. But if they don't make a move with a defenseman, it's going to have to be Shipachov. Or it's going to have to be somebody else along the roster. It's going to be William Carrier. It's going to be, you know, somebody else that you don't want to lose. And that's going to be the tough part. You look at Alex Tuck and you say captain material, right?
Absolutely. I've been on this train since the very beginning.
There's a real solid fear that if you keep screwing him off, you keep screwing him around, throwing him down in the AHL, there's a real possibility he'll be a captain for some other team.
Yeah, I mean, he was one of the steals of the expansion draft. I guarantee Minnesota is watching Alex Tuck right now and thinking, damn it, what did we do?
Yeah.
Because he is clear, like, it's clear he's a future, like, first-line player in this league. Absolutely. Or second-line player, yeah. Or whatever his role fits. But he's a top-six forward. He's going to be one of the best forwards on this team going forward, or whatever team he ends up on. But I think it's with this team. But you can't just keep... I mean, I know he gets it a little better than Shipachov does, mm-hmm. for example, but yeah. How many times is he going to be okay with when his contract comes up? It's like, man, no, screw you guys. You kept sending me down to the AHL when it was clear I was the best player on the team. No, I'm going to Detroit, or I'm going somewhere else.
Just anywhere. Anywhere where I know that I'm going to play. And I know that he's going to play next year.
Well, you know? Yeah, half this team is going to be unrestricted free agents.
But do you... How do you sell that to a guy that's ready now? How do you sell that to Shea Theodore? Shea Theodore is in Chicago making significantly less money.
Mm-hmm.
And he's watching 8 defensemen that he knows he's better than playing in the big club.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to, as much as he's going to say the right things, he's not excited about that.
No, he's got to be upset. And you want a guy to be upset. I feel like if he went down to the AHL and he's just like, okay, cool. That's not what you want. That's not the hunger, the mentality you want in your hockey players. But we said it when it was coming up to that cut day of the 23. McPhee's got a lot of tough decisions to make,
mm-hmm.
and he's going to have it again. It's almost that day again when these guys come back from injuries. And when I was talking to Nate Schmidt about the whole – being under pressure and stuff, and I asked him, I'm like, well, you come from Washington, that team was obviously unbelievably stacked,
mm-hmm.
this team doesn't have the top end talent, the superstars that one did. I'm like, compare to me the bottom of the roster and then the top of the AHL guys, mm-hmm. those guys that are fighting for those spots, what's better, Washington or here? And it's not even close. This team is much better on the bottom end. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the reason they're winning these games. Yeah. If you want to look at... Now, the whole pressure thing, that's like intangibles. But if you want to look at tangible, why is this team winning games?
Yeah.
The bottom of the roster is stacked.
So good.
Other teams don't have guys like Alex Tuck and Shea Theodore that they're deciding on whether they should play in the NHL or not.
Yeah.
That's insane.
No, I completely agree with you. And let's shift to the big storyline surrounding this team right now outside of Alex Tuck, and we could talk about Alex Tuck all the time. You and I were actually tweeting back and forth in the Buffalo game that this podcast was going to be Tuck, 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 Tuck. William Carrier, Tuck, 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 Tuck. And we didn't have Alex Tuck in our notes, but he has a way of getting into our conversation because he's clearly far and away the best player on the ice for the Golden Knights when he's on the ice for the Vegas Golden Knights. But big storyline, Marc-Andre Fleury out with a concussion, hasn't skated. Yesterday when we talked to Gerard Gallant, he said that he hadn't even talked to Fleury in a couple of days. They had an off day, and then they returned to practice. I think it's bad. Like, I think it's a really, really bad concussion, and I think it's going to be a long time before Marc-Andre Fleury's back.
What makes you think that, though?
I just do. I just think the way that he was hit. Okay, like, we're not
the
talking...
The hit didn't look that hard to me, though.
It didn't, but you have to take into account the guy that hit him. Anthony Mantha is a big, big, powerful guy.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a knee to the front of the head, so it's not just the impact to the front of the brain, it's the recoil and Fleury's head coming back and hitting the back of his skull, too. Like, I don't know, man. He's had... This is his fourth diagnosed concussion.
No, third. This is the third.
This is the third
record,
diagnosed?
On record, okay. Yeah. There are other ones that people, like, that speculation that he had concussions, but... Because when I wrote the story when he got the concussion, I went back and I looked...
Yeah.
Pretty extensively, and I found two other concussions prior to this, and it was at the end of 2015 and the beginning of 2016. They were only like a couple months apart.
Yeah,
and those were the two that were.
I don't know, man. I think the way that his body language immediately after it happened, laying down on the ice, clutching his head. I don't know. I think it's bad. I think every single time you get a head injury, it leaves you more exposed to have a longer recovery time, and you know, I don't know. I don't think it's a good situation for him at all.
See, I'm not as. I mean, I don't know, so I don't want to like guess how long he's going to be out, especially with concussions. It's so hard, but mm-hmm. I don't think it's that bad. I think, like you said, because he has a history of concussions, they could keep him out longer just as a precaution.
Mm-hmm.
And if Malcolm Subban keeps winning, then there's no reason to bring him back. And they can, like, say Fleury's like, okay, looks like you're 100%. If Subban keeps winning, there's no reason to bring Marc-Andre Fleury back before he needs to. But, and the St. Louis Blues game will be played before this airs.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling these next two games are going to be, they're going to remind people why the Boston Bruins cut Malcolm Subban to begin with.
Are you saying that they're going to remind people about the moment George McPhee said, we wanted to take a chance on a player that we don't know is ready to play at this level yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
And like you said, the litmus test is the Chicago Blackhawks. Sure. I think the Blues might be better than the Blackhawks.
Yeah, it's tough for me with the Blues because I don't look at Jake Allen as ever being the answer to anything, ever.
Wow, yeah, but he has nothing to do with what they're going to do to Subban.
No, I totally agree. I just think that it's a winnable game because Jake Allen is between the pipes. Like, I think the Blues can score 7 goals on Malcolm Subban. I think so little of Jake Allen that I think the Golden Knights can score 8. You know what I mean? Like,
see, I actually like Jake Allen.
I can't stand the guy. I don't know why. I don't look at him as a goalie that can win a game by himself.
Well, he won't have to.
That's true.
Tonight.
That's a good point. So I agree with you because I think Subban has been protected. And I know as much as Gerard Gallant's going to say we don't change our game based on who the goalie is in net, I think that's a complete crock.
Oh, they absolutely have. How many two-on-ones did Fleury face the first 4 games?
And I can't count them.
I don't think they've had a two-on-one.
No.
On Subban,
no.
Because they're playing back. They're playing in a shell.
Mm-hmm.
They're protecting him. And it's like, why didn't you do that with Fleury? You could have, like, he wouldn't have given up 7 goals against the Red Wings.
Exactly. And I asked him. I'm like, do you change the way you play? He's like, no. I mean, and he's like, I know it may look that we do. Like, no, you do.
Maybe Gallant is telling the truth, and maybe from a coaching perspective,
he's not changing.
They
anything.
Aren't telling them to do anything different. But just the players themselves, Colin Miller, knowing Subban's behind him, doesn't jump up as much.
Yeah, I asked Brad Hunt about that too. I said, do you change what you do knowing that Subban's back there as opposed to Fleury? And he's towing the coach's lines. Like, no, we don't change anything.
Yeah,
I think they do.
And I don't think maybe even
it might be subconscious.
Players, maybe it's not okay. I know Subban's back there. I'm not going to jump into the play as much. Maybe it's just in the heat of the moment when you're making that split decision,
mm-hmm.
you're less likely to be aggressive as a defenseman when you have a young goalie back there as opposed to Marc-Andre Fleury. Now, what I was trying to get to was everyone right now is like, oh, Fleury's going to be out a while. It's no big deal because they keep winning.
Mm-hmm.
If Subban gets lit up for 13 goals in the next 2 games.
You think that's a solid number?
All of a sudden, all of a sudden, there's a little more urgency to getting Fleury back on this in the lineup. Now, from a trainer's perspective, you don't care if the team's winning or losing. We're making sure this guy's healthy, and we're not bringing him back until he is.
Sure.
But like I said, if Subban's winning and playing well, they could even hold Fleury out even longer than he needs to just to make sure he's healthy. Whereas if Subban's getting lit up, that may get sped up a little bit.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And when you look at Malcolm Subban, and the thing that I think is most frustrating for us in the media and probably for the fans is that we don't have any legitimate metrics to gauge how he's playing or how he's improving. Because Gerard Gallant doesn't give us anything. We haven't been able to talk to Dave Pryor, but we're working on that. So quieting his game, that can mean a number of different things. And when you've got Subban, who's an athletic goalie, who can make acrobatic, super athletic, reactionary saves, I don't think that you want to completely take that away from him and try to turn him into Carey Price, who's very much a positional, read the play, know your angles type of goalie.
I think Subban has actually been less reactionary. I think he's just been made himself big and let the pucks hit him in the chest. That's what he, in watching him these, and I admittedly didn't watch a lot of Providence hockey.
No.
I think we kind of misjudged what kind of goalie Subban is. Me watching it, he's Fleury is the reactionary guy, flopping all over the place, diving. Fleury dives just because it's fun sometimes. Subban has been, I wouldn't say Carey Price, but he's just been the Eddie Belfour.
And
a big, solid dude that just makes his body big, he closes his butterfly, and just lets the puck hit him in the chest.
But how much of that is Malcolm Subban's game? How much of that is Dave Pryor's coaching over the last 3 weeks? We don't know.
I don't know because, like I said, I didn't watch enough of him in Providence, but I think I think a lot of people were a little off on what we thought Subban was coming in. I think he's actually more of a positional guy that just gets in front of the puck and just doesn't make the reactionary saves like Fleury does. Mm-hmm. Fleury's one of the best of this like era of hockey at the reactionary saves.
Right.
I think Subban's a little different. We'll see. He hasn't been tested a lot. He hasn't had to make a lot of reactionary saves because most of the shots that he's had have not been dangerous chances.
Right.
We're going to find out over these next two games, St. Louis and Chicago.
So real quick before we get out of here, because we're up against it and Ari's trying to kick us out of the studio because he's been up a lot over the last couple of hours, late night for this guy. St. Louis, what do you think happens? And obviously this is going to air after the St. Louis game, but what's your prediction for tonight's game?
I say 5-2 Blues.
That's not too bad of a showing for Subban. You think he gets pulled?
No. I don't think Subban gets pulled either of these games.
Okay. When do you think we see Oscar Dansk play?
It all depends. If Fleury doesn't, let's just assume Fleury doesn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be probably during this Canadian road trip.
Okay.
They go to New York and then they go to Canada. I think somewhere during the Canadian road trip, you see that guy.
Okay. And then, because we won't have a podcast before the Chicago game, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, and the way they play the Blues can obviously change my opinion because the Blues are the best team they've played so far.
Yep.
But right now I'd say something similar to the 5-2. It's going to be like a 6-1 game or something. Chicago and St. Louis are really good. And I don't think losing to these two teams is anything to be like ashamed of. Like that, even if this team is going to continue playing well, losing to these two teams doesn't necessarily mean they're not going to continue this play. I think these are just two really good teams that are top of the Western Conference type teams.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, I agree with you. So that'll do it for us here on Rink Rats this week. We talked a lot about a lot, and the Vegas Golden Knights are still chugging along, 5-1 at the time of this recording. Will they be 5-3, 5-2 by the time you listen to this? I don't know. We'll see. Will they be 7-1? It's possible, I guess, right?
Hey, I wouldn't have thought 5-1 is possible. I'm the one that said 5-5, and everybody looked at me like I was crazy.
You had
crazy.
Three heads, man. Yeah. Yeah, that was wild. So that'll do it for us. Jesse, where can people find you?
on Twitter at @JesseGranger_ and at LasVegasSun.com. Every game, if you can't listen to it on the radio or watch it on TV, I got my live blog up there. Literally, there's nothing that I don't post to that that happens in the game that's significant. It's basically like watching the game. Go on there and check that out during the games.
Yes, you could do that. I've done it. It's kept me afloat every now and again. So you can find me at Ryan Hockey Guy on Twitter. That's at Ryan Hockey Guy. Until next week, we will talk to you soon.